And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? DJ Bucky back here for Move the Sticks. And we are in a transition period here, Buck. We've got Super Bowl behind us.
Yep.
We've got free agency in the draft just ahead of us.
I know it's an exciting time because we've been looking at all these guys kind of, you know, these prospects and stuff kind of away from the public eye. But now we get a chance to look at these guys, kind of make their mark as they enter the league. Obviously, the combine is the next thing that's up. We got a couple weeks before that starts. But it's kind of the first time that fans, NFL fans, hardcore NFL fans that aren't college fans, get a chance to hear some of the names that are going to be the stars for the next few years.
And for the way I do it, I don't know how you do it, Buck, but for me, I kind of, when I attack this, is a beast to get your arms around all these players. So
crazy.
What I like to do is I like to watch, really try and get two good games in. If I can maybe get to three on as many guys as possible, and so I can kind of get that big chunk of players covered with a 2 to 3 game exposure. And then after that, I'll go, okay, I got these guys kind of, I'll use the phrase in the neighborhood, right? Get them in the right neighborhood. We got time to get them in the right house. And then after that, I can go back and say, okay, I have this clump of corners or this clump of quarterbacks, and I'm going to go through and watch three more games on each of them, and then I'll be able to really get those guys situated correctly in terms of how I like them.
You know, I think this is a great time to kind of talk about the process because there's so many scouts out there, so many guys that aspire to be scouts. So we just kind of break down the process of just looking at the film and how many games does it take to really be able to throw out a grade. When I was scouting with the Carolina Panthers and the Seattle Seahawks, it took 3 games before you could throw a grade out on a player. And so very early in the fall, you may see 2 games from whatever we say last year was 2015, and then maybe 1 game from 2014, and you put that early grade in. Then you'll go and do the rest of your territory. You come back and do that second visit, and you'll finish up the tape work, maybe watch another 2 or 3 games to kind of figure out where he is and what you believe he will be in the league. Since I've been on this side of the business in 2008, I try to knock out 2 to 3 to kind of get a feel for what they are. I try to bridge that with seniors, seeing them in the All-Star game, seeing them against the best of the best, and I try to work backwards. Mm-hmm. I try to use that, okay, here's my exposure to them when they played the best players. Then I try and pinpoint some of the best games and kind of get a feel for what you talk about, put them in the neighborhood. So you won't hear me make big definitive statements at this time because there's still time in the process. As we get into March and as we get closer to April, then I'll begin to say, this is what I believe the guy is, this is where he fits, this is the grade that I'll put on him, and here's where I expect him to be picked.
You always want to get a live exposure, whether you can go see these guys play in the fall, which is ideal, or you go see them play in an All-Star game, or, you know, your last chance, really, you got the combine and the pro days. But it is always helpful once you kind of eyeball these guys in person. That, to me, is kind of like the final step in being able to say, okay, this is what this guy is. This is how I feel comfortable with him. Once you've seen him live, you studied him on tape, and then ideally, if you're working for a team, you're going to get to visit with the kid, get to know him a little bit, kind of put all that together, and that goes into your evaluation.
It does go into the evaluation. Now, we're kind of shortchanged because we don't get an opportunity to really visit with them like teams would visit with them. We don't have the opportunity to go out and do the private workouts. Like, yes, we'll see the bulk of the kids. Obviously, the top kids are at the NFL Combine. We'll see them. They'll work out right in front of us. We may make our way to a couple pro days, but we won't get all of that information. So we're trying to take bits and pieces and put it together. And the difference is we're not grading for a specific team. We are, in essence, grading for the league. We're trying to figure out which guys fit best with which teams based on the scheme and the coach and how you kind of see those guys meshing. So it's very, very, very subjective from our end, much more subjective on this end than it would be if we were working for our respective team.
Interesting thing is a lot of executives now talking about college directors, director of player personnel, general managers, they won't even go out to colleges anymore in September, maybe even not even early October. And the whole thinking is, that's kind of the cupcake part of the schedule for a lot of these college teams. So they want to be able to go into a school on a visit, maximize their time, be able to go in there, watch 3 or 4 good opponents. So a lot of times, higher-up guys, not even really going out on the road till you get to late October, early November.
You know, that's what I would like to do. You know, it's funny. I go back. I had a conversation with a scout the other day, and I remember sitting in training camp. and how you would map out your schedule.
Oh, yeah.
And anybody who hasn't done this, like, I have to tell you, like, this is kind of the funny part. So in training camp, in the middle of 2-a-days, while your pro team is working, trying to figure out who's going to make the team, the scouts are there to not only look at the team, but they're really there to build out the schedule. So you have your calendar, a copy of the calendar a couple months in advance. You have a roadmap. You have your hotel guides. And then you have the football schedule,
and you have a list of the list of the dates that are going to be closed. Certain schools are closed.
Yeah, so restrictions. So for those who don't know, certain schools are not open for scouts to come in and visit. And really, a lot of that stems in the SEC, LSU,
paranoia,
LSU, Georgia, Alabama. They may only give you a week where all the scouts can come in and look at their players, watch the tape, and ask them. So you're trying to work around those restrictions on top of trying to travel around the country, because I don't know if guys know this, but most scouts are asked to drive around their territory.
Oh, yeah.
You and I both work on the West, and so the West is very vast. You talk about the number of states: California, Arizona, New Mexico,
Idaho, Wyoming,
like all
Colorado.
Over. So if you just look at the map, like from the Rocky Mountains over, typically the West Coast Scout is responsible for that. So if you think about building your schedule around these 8 to 10 hour drives, and how many days do I need to give myself to drive and travel and all of that other stuff, combined with looking at the schedule to try and see the maximum matchups, who are the best matchups for my top flight corner to play against a top flight wide receiver. It's a lot that goes into it. On this side, it's a little easier. We can go to the tape deck. Who do I want to see him play against?
Oh, yeah.
I can watch the tape and kind of get it done.
All right. Well, Buck, we're going to jump into a couple positions on today's podcast just to kind of get your wet the whistle a little bit for draft prep. But I thought before we do that, we touch on something we're going to have a video out. So if you haven't seen our videos, go to YouTube, pump in Move the Sticks. It'll pop right up. We have, I think, almost 100 videos now on there. But one of the videos we're going to be doing and releasing today is on the 5 lessons the Broncos taught us about championship teams. And I thought we'd kind of hit that here on the audio as well, Buck. And I'll start us off here. We can kind of ping pong back and forth. They taught us that a dominant front seven is crucial.
I think is the biggest thing in football. What we're seeing now, defense gives you an opportunity to lift the Lombardi Trophy. As much as offense and as much as we like to see the ball go all over the yard and fantasy football comes into play, we see these skilled players. The bottom line is the team that is going to win the trophy is going to have a dominant defense. So in the team building phase, you need to make sure that you are building an elite defense at all turns. And the best way to do it is to do it up front. We saw Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware and Malik Jackson and Derek Wolfe completely dominate the game against the Carolina Panthers. And we saw them do it throughout the playoffs. They faced three of the most prolific offenses in football in terms of scoring offense: Pittsburgh Steelers, New England Patriots, the Carolina Panthers, and they were able to lock them all down because that front seven was able to hunt. We've talked about the top positions, and you said, look, pass rushers right there. If it's not one after quarterback, it's two. It's right there. You have to have someone who can get home. And I think what we saw from the Denver Broncos, it's absolutely true. Von Miller, second overall pick in the draft. DeMarcus Ware, I think, was maybe 12th overall when he came
high
out.
First rounder.
Right, 12th or 13th, right behind Sean Merriman. Commit your resources to making sure that you have someone, multiple people that can get after the passer. You have to build that front seven. It's a house. You have to build the front line.
And you can't have too many up front. You look at Shane Ray, they drafted.
Another first
round pick. Shaq Barrett, who's a young player who can really rush the quarterback. So you have those waves of guys. I go back to those Dallas Cowboy teams that were winning in the mid-90s, and they had 8 or 9 defensive linemen. They were just rolling them through there. So I think having depth and talent and being able to get after the quarterback is huge, and also, you know, kind of group that together with the front seven. Mention those linebackers, because Carolina didn't win the trophy, but they were right there, and a lot of it because of what they were up front as well as what they were at the linebacker position. The same can be said for the Seattle Seahawks with kind of how they're built, dominant front sevens.
Dominant front sevens. Look, we both worked at places. Like, obviously, you spent a lot of time in Baltimore. I worked for the Carolina Panthers and the Seattle Seahawks, but I was really shaped by a lot of stuff that happened in Carolina in terms of the defense. We went to Super Bowl 38 behind a defense that featured Julius Peppers, Chris Jenkins, Brinson Buckner, and then Mike Rucker. Julius Peppers is a transcendent star. Chris Jenkins was a dominant multiple Pro Bowl player. Mm-hmm. When I look at it, Mike Rucker went to the Pro Bowl. When I look at the front four, being able to have multiple guys along the line that can command a double team, that can get to the passer, that can stop the run, they're athletic enough to create problems, you have to build your defense with that in mind. I think the big thing will be, do you build it inside out or outside in?
Yeah.
Do you start with the pass rusher, then get the defensive tackle, or do you get the defensive tackle, then try and find the pass rushers on the outside to complement it? But regardless of what your style and preference is, you better have guys that can win up front in that front four.
All right, Buck, I went first. Their dominant front seven is key. How about a second lesson we learned from the Broncos?
The roster must be balanced and not completely dependent upon the quarterback. When you look at these teams, a lot is always made on our side in the media about the quarterback is quarterback-driven league, it's this and that. But the teams that are really winning championships are teams that have balanced rosters, meaning that the quarterback is complemented by dominant defense, a strong running game. He has pass catchers on the perimeter and maybe a tight end that allows him to do it. The offensive line is good. So in building a championship team, yes, it's important to have the quarterback, but only a handful of elite quarterbacks. So if I can't get the elite quarterback, the best way to give myself an opportunity to get to that final game is to make sure that all the pieces are right. My defense, my running game, the perimeter players, all of those guys that have enough blue chip players that allows me to play with a quote-unquote game manager at quarterback because it gives me a chance. Because in essence, the Denver Broncos won the championship with a game manager and Peyton Manning playing quarterback.
Yeah, against a team that was superior at the quarterback position. But if you were going to take a little pin and try and poke holes in these two teams, a lot easier to poke holes in the Carolina Panthers at certain positions, whereas Denver, I think, across the board, didn't have that glaring weakness that jumped out at you.
You know, they didn't have it. Demaryius Thomas, top pick, even though he didn't play well this year.
Yeah.
Top pick. They paid money to get Emmanuel Sanders, so they have two receivers that can make it. Owen Daniels was a guy that was a perennial pro bowler early in his career. You look at the defense side of the ball, we just talked about the
all front, three levels.
All three levels. The front four is outstanding. The linebacker core are solid. And then in the back end, they have guys that can lock down and play and run and chase. When you're building a team, the roster needs to be stacked. And I believe this, and I was taught this, to be a championship team, you need to have 10 to 12 blue players mm-hmm. on there. Blue players mean they're the top 3 to 5 at their position in the league. When you have 10 to 12 of those guys, your roster gives you an opportunity to be the last team standing at the end of the tournament.
All right, third one here. Can never have too many talented corners. That's one of the five lessons we learned from this team. We talked about building depth and building talent. I don't care if you've got two corners, go get a third. If you got three, go get a fourth. Can't have too many. What it did is allowed them to lock up the Carolina Panthers and play an aggressive brand of football behind Wade Phillips and his scheme. I think when you have secondary like that, and we look back, I know you look at some of the Pro Bowl players they had in New England last year in the secondary. Then you go back and look at those Seattle teams with the Legion of Boom. We've seen these championship teams have a lot of resources in the secondary.
You have to commit pass rushers and cover guys. You have to have the ability to cover people. And you talk about the Denver Broncos really setting a blueprint. I'm looking at three big-time, maybe elite, even though Bradley Roby's not in the conversation yet, he will be because in the playoffs, he took his game up to another level. First-round pick, they got him at the bottom of the first round a couple years ago. Add him to the mix with Aqib Talib. Then you have Chris Harris playing at a high level, even though he was an undrafted free agent. You now have guys who not only are talented, but they have versatile skill sets, meaning they can play press, they can play off. Each of those guys can move in the slot. So now you've given your defensive coordinator a full complement of weaponry to use. Now it's at his disposal to figure out, how do I want to mix and match my players? But you're right. Can never have too many talented cover guys.
All right, what's the next one, Buck?
I'm going to say this, and it's unsung because we always give specialists a hard time. Kickers, punters, and return guys. In that Super Bowl, what we saw, their special teams played a huge role.
Oh, field position was huge.
Huge. McManus knocked down the field goals that he was asked to make. The punter, Colquitt, consistently pinned them back and kept them inside the 20, forced them to drive the ball down the field. Norwood broke out a long punt return that set the game. So it's not sexy. And I remember, like, obviously being on the road, having to crank out
the
tape, looking at kickers and punters, looking at the return tape, the special teams tape, looking at cover guys, looking at starters that played on cover teams. You have to invest in special teams. Coach told me a long time ago, if you win two of the three phases, you're more than likely going to win. Offense, defense, special teams, the kicking game should be one that you should aim
to win.
And it is the cheapest. It's the cheapest way to win games. It's the cheapest way to build the back end of your roster. guys that can play on special teams, because you can't just be a backup in the league. You have to be able to contribute in the kicking game.
No, I think that's huge. All right, final one here, final lesson. The Broncos taught us about championship winning football. Don't lose on offense. Protect the football. So we've talked so much about defense. We talked about special teams. To me, when you look at offensively, a lot of these playoff games were lost more so than won. You cannot give the football away. You have to have value of the football. I know Peyton had a pick, put the ball on the ground, but overall I thought this team, when they kind of got it going, when Peyton was reinserted in the lineup, what they did, they protect the football, and that kind of got them on their championship run.
Yeah, I think it's twofold. Marty Schottenheimer used to tell us more games are lost than won. The best way to ensure that you're going to win games is don't beat yourself. Don't give the ball over. Don't give it to the other team. The Carolina Panthers coming into this led the league in turnovers and takeaways. Huge reason, part of the reason why they were able to make it to Super Bowl 50. They took care of the ball on offense. They took it away on defense. The Denver Broncos, in looking at the research packet prior to the Super Bowl, they were 9-0 when they got two or more turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge benefit when you're able to get your offense extra possessions. You have a solid special teams guy in your kicker where you can knock those field goals in inside the 40. Very important to make sure that you have guys that protect the football. The quarterback first. So when I'm looking at college guys, I can't have guys that are turning the ball over, that play carelessly, that are haphazard with the ball. Skill guys that are handling the ball. I don't want to see running backs that have a history of fumbling the ball. And my wide receivers, I need them to catch the ball when it's there to be made, and I need them to also take care of the ball. Protect the football on offense. Let's end every possession with a kick, be it a PAT or a punt. But don't give away cheap possessions.
No question. So I think those are five good lessons there we learned from the Denver Broncos. And, Bucky, as we kind of transition here to the draft, I look at a couple positions we touched on. I'm talking about that front seven, specifically a D-line being able to get after the quarterback. But then we also talking about can't have too many corners. So I thought maybe we could kind of run through some of these names that have jumped out to us, not necessarily in any particular order, but just some guys up front that you're excited about in this draft class, and then we'll hit on some of these corners. Up front on the defensive line, to me, Buckner, DeForest Buckner from Oregon, one of the best interior defenders. We've got Bosa on the edge, but let's kind of just narrow it maybe down inside of these defensive tackles for a minute here, and DeForest Buckner, start with him.
You know, DeForest Buckner is a very intriguing prospect, long, rangy guy. In Oregon system, look, he's a 3-4 defensive end. I believe some teams would view him as kind of a 5 technique and a 3-4 defense, or even a 4-3 defense. Kind of reminds me of Calais Campbell in terms of the length and the way that he plays. Plays on the other side of the ball, gives you the ability to not only stop the run, but he also can rush the passer. And so when you're looking for these interior guys, I need guys that can not only act as run stoppers, but if you can give me the added benefit of being able to rush the passer, now I can use you as a three-down player, but I want guys that can build the defense up strong down the middle. DeForest Buckner is certainly a guy that can do that.
He's got the hump move, too. He's got that old Reggie White hump move. For a guy that's that tall, he can get underneath people, leverage them, and lift them off their feet. Just shows you how strong he is. Plays really, really hard. I think he's a better prospect than Eric Armstead.
Completely different animal than Eric Armstead.
Or upfield.
And I think the interesting thing, if DeForest Buckner had come out last year, I believe that he probably would have been a first-round pick.
He would have gone over Eric. I think he would have gone over Armstead when I did him last year side by side. I was kind of shocked he didn't come out last year. But I think he's going to be a top 10 pick in this draft class. You know, we talked about Bosa on the edge. We've got some other edge guys that are interesting, Noah Spence and company. But at the defensive tackle position, you got DeForest Buckner. Then we got some guys we saw at the Senior Bowl, Bucky, that really, really showed out. And Sheldon Rankins from Louisville probably be at the top of that list.
He has to be at the top of the list. Based on just the Senior Bowl alone, he was unblockable. Quickness, first step get off, his ability to turn speed into power, but also his ability to show some finesse. He has a nice spin move that he uses on centers and guards that allows him to create penetration, strong with his hands so he can button jerk and snatch people to get out the way. Has a swipe move that we also saw in one-on-ones. This is a player. I'm not calling him Aaron Donald, but I'm going to say that Aaron Donald's success as an interior defender will allow teams to look at Sheldon Rankins and see him as an impact player, because he can be a guy that gives you double digits in sacks as an interior defender.
Yeah, those guys are hard to find, too. He's very, very explosive, great with his hands. He's a loose athlete. I put a little play on Vine maybe a month ago or so. He scoops up a fumble, and you watch him make somebody miss, Buck. He looks like a running back.
The athleticism, light on his feet, a big dancing bear with nimble feet, the agility, the lateral quickness that you look for. Very impressed with him at the Senior Bowl. Even more impressed when I popped into All-22 and watched him on tape at Louisville.
You talk about dancing bear, and I think of of Dontari Poe, and a guy that kind of reminds me a little bit of Dontari Poe is Vernon Butler from Louisiana Tech.
You know, Vernon Butler is a guy that showed up at the Senior Bowl, was a guy that was very, very impressive. Big body, over 300 pounds, does a great job of playing with his hands. I thought he was stout in terms of being able to stack against the run, but he also flashed a little bit as a pass rusher. When you're looking at big guys, I'm looking at guys that have high motors, guys that have the versatility to be able to play maybe on the nose or also a little off as a three technique, I think Vernon Butler can do a couple different things in the league.
He got a lot of range there. How about one that I wasn't anticipating talking about? I still have to do him on tape. But what we watched him at the Senior Bowl and then get a chance to go back and watch the tape, Temple's got a nice little defensive tackle for him there in Ioannidis.
Yeah, Ioannidis, look. Very impressed with his quickness. I think, you know, we talk about the Aaron Donald phenomenon, trying to find guys that can play over the guard or the center that have the quickness to create immediate penetration. He is certainly one who shows the capacity to be able to do that. Was really an effective rusher in one-on-one matchups at the Senior Bowl, showed the ability to be able to get home. And when we went to the team things, the 9-on-7 and the 11-on-11 drills, he consistently showed up day after day after day. When you go back and match that with what he did at Temple, he's an intriguing player. Not a day one prospect, but I think day two, somewhere mid-second, bottom of third, he's coming off the board.
Yeah, no, he was interesting down there when we watched him. Man, there's a bunch of other guys too. We have from Penn State, we've got Austin Johnson. I thought it was a little bit underwhelming down there at the Senior Bowl. Liked him a little bit more on tape. We've got one of my favorite players in the draft who kicks inside as well as will go outside, Sheldon Day from Notre Dame.
Oh, look.
Ultra twitched up.
Super twitchy. Quickness, athleticism. He had a great week at the Senior Bowl because – he showed the versatility to be able to play outside, play inside. As we're talking about following the lessons of the Denver Broncos, I want enough versatile athletes that I can give my defensive coordinator the full gamut. I want him to have all the weapons that he needs to be able to mix some things up to create mismatches on the front line. Sheldon Day is a guy that certainly can do that. I like the quickness. I like the get off. I like the way he plays with his hands. His hands consistently were inside the opponent's chest. And look, if you win with your hands first, you always have an opportunity to win. Sheldon Day from Notre Dame was a guy that was very, very impressive.
Can't forget the two Alabama guys here. We got A'shaun Robinson, Jerron Reed. Jerron Reed, to me, is a better football player right now. He is physical. He is strong. You cannot move him in the run game. He's got lateral range. But A'shaun Robinson, to me, has a little more upside athletically. Hadn't totally put it together yet. He looks like he's 50 years old. So that is a grown man when you look at him in person.
You know, that would be the intriguing debate, the interesting debate that scouts would have in the meeting room. Which guy offers the immediate dividends right now? And are you willing to bypass the immediate dividends maybe in Jerron Reed for the upside that A'shaun Robinson brings? Both guys are big. They're massive. You think about stopping the run. I want big physical pluggers, guys that can take on double teams, guys that allow my linebackers to run and chase. Robinson and Reed both have the capacity to occupy double teams at the point of attack, give you a little pass rush, but they're more so run pluggers, guys that set the table for your linebackers to run and chase.
That just shows you how deep this draft is. We haven't even talked about Robert Kimdiche, who might be the most physically gifted of any of these defensive tackles, but you got to kind of sort through some off-the-field stuff. The production is not great. You know, you look at the stat sheet, you're not going to be overwhelmed, but you want somebody who talk about explosive and dynamic. Kimdiche gives you that.
Kimdiche gives you all of that, and I think anyone who's been following the high school game as he made his way to college, look, he was the number one recruit when he came out. He's a guy that kind of surprised everyone. Not surprised everyone, but many of us didn't expect him to go to Ole Miss. Goes to Ole Miss, plays inside, plays outside. Look, he was a running back in high school, has shown some of that ability during his time, so it speaks to his athleticism. Yes, we must vet out the character, but just from a pure athletic potential standpoint, he has the things that you look for. He's going to test very, very well at the combine. He has the movement skills at the line of scrimmage that you look for. Yes, can I get him? Do I need him to play a little harder at times? Absolutely. But in terms of just a specimen, he is a specimen that I want to build around. I'm willing to take a chance in the middle of the first round and take him in and make sure that I surround him with the right people because I think he has the opportunity to be a dominant player inside.
Now, just to let you know, all these guys we've talked about so far, these are top 50 players. These are first and second round picks. And I still got three more, Bucky. That just shows you the depth of this draft class at the defensive tackle position. Let's roll through these last three guys here real quick. Andrew Billings from Baylor is kind of a thick, squatty, long-armed, powerful run defender. I don't think he's a great pass rusher. I think he's more kind of a push-the-pocket guy who relies solely on power. I don't think he's going to have a lot of production in that area, but can be a dominant defender against the run. My one knock on him, and this is something I always try and keep an eye on, when you're doing interior offensive lineman and interior defensive lineman, I want you to stay on your feet. He's on the ground a little bit too much for me.
He is on the ground. I got a chance to see him up close. I went to the Russell Athletic Bowl because they were playing my Tar Heels. Watched him. Look, he is hard to move off the spot. Mm-hmm. And so when you're building the defense and being stout down the middle, I want guys that are tough to move because they create opportunities for my linebackers. Billings is a very, very talented player. Is on the ground a little bit, but he is a strong young man. Yeah, strong
to me, I think second round for him. One of the things will be interesting in this draft class. Last year, I loved Danny Shelton. I put a big grade on him. But Danny Shelton didn't stay on the field because he's a first and second down player.
Yes.
So you look at the play sheet at the end of the game or the snap count sheet, you're going, okay, well, he played really well. We only played 22 snaps. So how high are you going to invest a pick in a player in today's game with so much passing going on if you're not getting to the quarterback and you're coming off the field and passing downs? I don't know that that carries first-round value in today's NFL.
Today's NFL is changing because of everyone leaning to more of these passing attacks on offense. You have to build your team with stopping the pass in mind. And even though defensive coordinators always think about stopping the run, from a draft value perspective, you have to invest your capital in guys that can knock the quarterback around. Billings is a very good player, stout run defender, but I need more of a pass rusher on the inside if it's an ideal team that I'm building.
All right, Kenny Clark from UCLA, somebody that can get upfield, can rush the passer, intriguing player, got a little bit hurt late in the year, saw him against the USC live, he struggled, was not totally healthy, but this is a guy that's got a lot of production, he's got some dynamic traits to him, I thought he played with really good effort. He's not somebody that's going to hold up consistently against double teams and down blocks and things like that. He's not like Billings in that sense, not that strong, but he is somebody that provides you some inside rush.
Does give you inside rush, gives you a little versatility, can play the one technique over the center, but also kick out to the three technique, agile, athletic. I think he plays hard, sideline to sideline chaser. I was impressed with his effort. Watched him play against Stanford, watched him up close against Nebraska. He's a very intriguing prospect, but as you listed, so many defensive tackles that a team sitting in the late 30s, 40s.
You're going to get a good player.
Get a really good player. So if I'm a team this year, I want to make sure that I accumulate picks at the top of the second round because I believe I'm going to get a first-round talent at the top of the second.
Look at all these guys we've rolled through here, Bucky. And I said just one more, but I'm going to group two together, this last two. And, again, I think these guys are both top 50-type players. Adolphus Washington from Ohio State and Jonathan Bullard from Florida, two guys interior-wise that can get upfield.
Two guys that are very, very impressive. You talk about Washington, a guy who quick hands, great hands. Love the way he plays with his hands. Routinely catches blockers trying to put their hands on him. He can catch him mid-spot, use the swipe move, has a spin move that he used. Also is nimble with a little lateral quickness. Really, really like what I saw from him on tape. I've looked at Bullard. I'm impressed with Bullard, what he brings to the table.
A little bit undersized.
Haven't done enough, yep. Haven't done enough tape to fully say that I love him inside. But I think, I mean, with all these guys, I think building a team, building a deep and talented roster, man, first two rounds, these guys are going to run. You're going to see a ton of defensive tackles, interior players come off the board very, very
yeah,
early.
Bullard to me and Day from Notre Dame. Bullard from Florida, Day from Notre Dame. Two guys that you can play them outside, you can kick them inside. They got some versatility there. But that just gives you an idea. We say this is the deepest position in the 2016 NFL draft. Those guys we just mentioned, I think we probably just gave you 12 or 13 names that could roll off the board in the top 50 picks. So it is loaded, Bucky. And then, you know, we'll get to the edge rushers on another episode real quick here. I thought let's just roll through a couple of the top corners and just give people an idea of what that looks like. We talked about the Broncos being loaded at that position. Jalen Ramsey, to me, has played corner, has played safety. I like him best at safety. I think he could play corner. He's extremely, extremely gifted, but this is a young guy that I know you have a history and a relationship with.
Man, Jalen Ramsey, known him since high school. He was on one of my 707 teams on the Nike Tour. This is a guy that's a talented athlete. Kind of reminds me of a poor man's Charles Woodson in terms of his versatility, his ability to do multiple things, play multiple roles in the back end. And as we're seeing these guys start, I mean, you talk about Eric Berry in the past being a guy that is a safety that has cover corner skills, Tyrann Mathieu, who has the same, Charles Woodson, as I alluded to. Jalen Ramsey is a guy that I believe, depending on what your void is in the back end, he can fill the void. Cerebral player. He's going to be a world-class athlete. He's going to test out the gym. He's going to blow it up at the combine. And he is someone that I think, in terms of just a pure football player, I think he may be the best pure football player in this draft. And that says a lot with the Miles Jacks, the Jalen Smiths, the other guys that are in this draft, Joey Bosa's. I just believe in terms of pure football, like if we're strapping it up and we're throwing the ball out there and we're playing in the park, Jalen Ramsey is the guy that I probably would take with the first pick because I believe he has that it on the inside that's going to lead my team to win.
I'm going to give you the last line of my report on Jalen Ramsey here, Buck. Overall, Ramsey's explosiveness, versatility, and playmaking skills are very similar to Tyrann Mathieu coming out of LSU. He's my number two player in this draft.
You know, he's my number one player. I mean, I'm in love. Like, in terms of having a football crush, Jalen Ramsey I have a football crush on. He is a guy that plays the game the right way. And when I'm looking at guys and I'm looking at young guys on tape and I'm watching their interactions, not only in play and out of play, football means a lot to him. He's going to bring it down in, down out. And the guy that you compared him to, Tyrann Mathieu, he's another one that football was very, very important. And those kind of guys lift the energy and spirit of the unit that they're on. I'm absolutely willing to take him at a top pick. I mean, I would take him number one overall if I needed a guy in the back end.
All right, a couple more here. Let's roll through these quick. Vernon Hargraves from Florida has given up some plays. He's undersized, but we use the word twitch a lot in scouting and just explosiveness and sudden. Man, he is a pretty dynamic athlete.
Dynamic athlete, twitched up. Also very familiar with Vernon from working with all these guys on the Nike Tour. Very, very, very intelligent, understands the game, high football IQ, super athletic, kind of reminds me of Joe Hayden in terms of, like, the way he plays. I know he's a little undersized, and so he's going to lose some
of those 50-50 balls. I think he's got a little more juice than Joe Hayden.
Absolutely, because Joe didn't test well, but in terms of Joe's been a
smooth
athlete, fluid in terms of turns and transitions, can play up and off. I like Vernon Hargraves. I don't think you can go wrong with Vernon Hargraves as a shutdown corner.
I think he'll be a top 10 pick. He's somebody I think come in and play him in the nickel. He has a lot of value in there. He can blitz, do all kinds of things in there. Now a tricky one to me, Mackenzie Alexander. We talked about him previously from Clemson. Has all the movement skills you want to see from a corner. He's beautiful, so fluid, so athletic. Does not have an interception in his college career. He's a redshirt sophomore, so it's only 2 years to go off of on tape. Doesn't get a lot of balls thrown his way. It's going to be kind of a tricky evaluation because of that. But he's tough. He'll put his face in the fan. I love that about him. But to me, you're looking at somebody, I don't think he's going to be all that big. I stood next to him at the national championship game. I wouldn't be surprised if he is – barely 5'10". I wouldn't be surprised if he came in maybe even under 5'10". We'll find out at the combine, but that's going to be a tricky evaluation.
Tricky evaluation because you would like to have we're big on production. I want to see ball skills. I want to have a guy that can take the ball away. We talked about being able to turn it over. With Mackenzie Alexander, I love his feistiness. I love his competitiveness. Ball skills would be an issue and also versatility in terms of his technique. I need to see that at the combine. Can he backpedal? Can he play off? Can he judge the ball when it's in its air? He will make money if he can show that at the combine.
Those are kind of the big guys, the big three right there. Before we just touch on two names real quick here, Buck, I want you to look through the glass there and see if you recognize the guy that's behind the glass. I know I've seen him somewhere before.
No, that's an imposter. Who is that? I don't see that. Who is that?
What's going on, guys?
No! He's back!
I need him to talk more. I don't recognize the voice from heaven.
What's
happening?
Wow,
he is back. So do Nate and Mike Robb know that you got a little break? You know, are you cool? Are they cool with this?
Hey, yeah, I had to have a little break. Will and Condit have been killing it back here.
They
so,
did.
You know, they've been killing it. All Super Bowl week.
Very capable hands you left us. Very, right. Very capable hands.
A-team, the A-team.
You better be careful. You're like Blake Griffin. They're going to talk about you. They're going to talk about
traded.
Moving you out.
Yeah.
They're talking about moving you out. You're not going to be with the Hoopers.
Hey, I know, but I was glad to be back, guys. Fun Super Bowl.
Just give me one thing. I just
What's
want
up?
One piece
what
of
you
information
need?
From you, TD.
What you need?
Did you give – I said this to Nate in passing. I said, dude, you're the only person that's ever interviewed Lady Gaga, and she was dressed more conservatively than
Yeah, that's true.
Nate he rocked the man there. Capris in that interview.
Yes, that is very true. He was very excited about the interview, though. He's still on a high right now.
He did a great
job. I've not been
it.
Able to get in touch with him since. He's just so excited.
He's floating a little bit.
Yeah,
no,
it is.
Anyways, that was fun. But anyways, TD's back here. Real quick, Bucky, just two more names I wanted to hit on real quick just because I've watched these guys over the last couple weeks here. Eli Apple from Ohio State. Watch his last games of the year. He's 6 foot. He's a 200-pound kid. He's a big corner. I thought he was very physical. I thought he was fluid. I don't know how much pure top speed he had. Ball skill-wise, he's more likely to play the hands than to go up and get the football. But I liked him. I put a big grade on him. Now, I've since doing these other receivers. As we mentioned earlier, I get 2 or 3 games in early, then I'll circle back. But I started doing some other receivers early in the year, like the Minnesota kid and some others, and I seen Eli Apple give up some plays earlier in the year. So I'm probably a little bit high on him. I'll come down on him a little bit as I do some more work on him. But, man, it's hard to find big corners.
Hard to find corners that are 6 foot, that are right around 200 that can play the ball. They have snaps that are tough enough to come up and tackle, because one of the things we saw in the Super Bowl, those corners from the Denver Broncos,
they don't miss tackles.
They didn't miss tackles. They make tackles in the open field. Eli Apple is someone that I'm familiar with also on the Nike Tour. Was on one of my teams in the Midwest, played in the championship game 7-on-7. Smart player, understands big concepts. Watching him at Ohio State, what I liked about him, he can press, he can play off, he understands how to keep the ball in front of the defense. Is he a guy that we can say is a pure lockdown guy? No, but in the right system, if you think about Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh transitioning to a zone team where they can do some cover two, they can play some regular three deep zone. Eli Apple is a guy that can do that. He can play man, but I'm more comfortable with him as a C-ball defender. Let's play some zone, allow him to hunt and chase the ball. I think he can be very, very good in a system like that.
All right, last guy. We're getting to wrap it up here real quick. William Jackson from Houston, another tall, physical kid who's got unbelievable ball skills. I put a big grade on him, but I think he'd be a second-round guy.
You know, big-time ball skills. Had a couple of interceptions in the Peach Bowl against Florida State. You can see the athleticism, the range. He's not going. I don't think he's going to be a great tester in terms of, like, I don't know if he's going to clock.
Well, I said low 4.5s. I said low 4.5s.
But what he can do, once again, as the league continues to transition and we're going back to more of a zone-based system where we can see the ball, get the ball out, pick off passes, and create turnovers, William Jackson is someone who can do that. There's value in guys who can create turnovers and give back to them.
You know who he reminded me of coming out, and I always hate to do this when you put big names on guys, but Richard Sherman.
Ooh.
So he reminded me of. Now, he's probably going to go in the second round. Richard Sherman went a little bit lower than that. But you talk about somebody that's tall, long, with great ball skills and toughness, probably going to run the 4.5s. Richard Sherman ran the 4.5s. It worked out quite well for him.
Playing in the right system, allowing him to do what he does very, very well. Those guys can have a lot of success.
Look at TD comes in. He's giving us the wrap it up. All right, we'll wrap it up.
I'm not a wrapper. I actually want to jump in with a fun story.
Oh,
see, I take Move the Sticks everywhere with me. So during Super Bowl week, I was at the Madden party, and I got a chance to talk to one Jameis Winston. You know,
nice.
I had to actually sit down and have a conversation with him, and I showed him. I was like, hey, we just did a piece on Cam Newton, but the very first time I did a piece like this, it was on you, Jameis Winston 360.
Mm-hmm.
Showed him what we did, told him about the interviews we went through, and he was very excited. I don't know if he's going to give it a listen. He was very busy. But he was pretty excited.
He didn't blow you off.
But you know what would have been better?
No, not at all.
You know what would have been better for that?
What up?
If the Move the Sticks guys were actually at the Super Bowl so they could actually
talk to him.
But you know, like,
that hurt a little
bit. I'm sure he was like, Move the Sticks? Yeah, where are those guys? Oh, they're
yeah,
they're,
he
they're
asked
back
me
in
a
LA.
Question, and I just ran
up back in LA.
I was like, oh, I got to go see Nate real quick.
Producer's here, but they're back in LA.
That's right. Hey, you know what? Doing the show on my underwear from home last week while TD was gallivanting
DJ
around
Cam,
the Super Bowl.
That was fun.
You know, you like DJ.
I did ask him, though, if he was going to the Super Bowl, and his response was like, nope, not until he makes it.
Yeah, good
very,
for him.
Very serious. Very locked in.
Good contribution from you right there.
Yeah, man.
Nice
move the sticks. I take it everywhere with me.
All right. That's going to do it for us today on the audio. Again, be sure to check out the video if you enjoyed that talk about what the lessons the Broncos taught us about championship football. We will have a video on YouTube. You can check that out as well as our Super Bowl recap stuff from earlier in the week and lots of evergreen content, which, Bucky, evergreen content for those that aren't in this line of work. Explain that what that is.
It means it can live forever. It means that you can go back and look at who's better, Odell Beckham Jr. versus Antonio Brown. And it doesn't matter that we did it in the middle of the season. It is still relevant because, I don't know, I think you went with Antonio Brown, but I know that you're probably now back on the Odell Beckham Jr.
No,
side.
No,
everything
no,
is
no,
kind
no.
of calm.
We also did a J.J. Watt and Von Miller.
Ooh, so that,
MVP,
could, yeah, that was an interesting
Miller.
We did that?
I think you went Von Miller.
I think we need to bring that back up. I think this would be the perfect time to re-release
you to,
that.
You might have
and
to
let,
do that.
And let the people do that. I think we should talk to the social team.
Let's make it happen.
Get that out there. You know, I mean, J.J. Watt just brought home Defensive Player of the Year. It's all.
Yeah, Von Miller just got the Super Bowl MVP.
I'm just saying, it's a good debate.
Yeah, I mean
let's not do it again.
Let's
let the people. We already did this.
He has three Defensive Player of the Year awards, right?
Yeah.
No rings.
Well, I know, man. Well, he didn't have Peyton Manning just throwing BBs all over the place. By the way, I was listening. I'll end on this one. I was driving home the other day. I actually had to text Matt Money Smith, our former partner here on the CFB, may he rest in peace, the CFB 24/7 podcast. He was on with Petros on his radio show here in Los Angeles, and they were talking about Peyton Manning, and Petros said he called him he said he was throwing balloons. So I texted Money. I said, tell Petros, I'm stealing that. Balloon thrower is now a new scouting term I'm using for quarterbacks with weenie arms. So there you go.
We saw some of those at the Senior Bowl, but we'll get to that later.
We'll get to it. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Again, check out all our content, iTunes, YouTube, NFL.com/podcast. It is all there for you. And we will be back next week with a couple new episodes and some new videos as we march towards the NFL draft.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to nfl.com/podcasts.
Hi and hello, football fans. Your old pal Dave Damashek here. Make sure you check out the Dave Damashek football program. You can watch it on YouTube, NFL.com. You can listen to it on iTunes or Stitcher or NFL.com/podcasts. We look at the world of pro football and the game called life.